Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. John Mueller, who is a political scientist in the field of international relations, as well as a scholar of the history of dance. He is currently the Woody H. Chair of National Security Studies at the Mershon Center for International Security Studies and a professor of both political science and dance at Ohio State University. His books include Atomic Obsession, Nuclear Alarmism from Hiroshima to Al-Qaeda, Overblown, How Politicians and the Terrorism Industry Inflate National Security Threats, and Why We Believe Them, and Terror, Security, and Money, Balancing the Risks, Benefits, and Costs of Homeland Security. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. John Mueller.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And you've been mentioned quite a bit just in the current issue of foreign policy, as well as in Salon.com by Glenn Greenwald. In both cases, they're pointing to your article in the latest issue of International Security, The Terrorism Delusion, America's Overwrought Response to September 11th. And people are making the connection there with the hysteria that we recently witnessed over the London Games, leading to presidential candidate Mitt Romney criticizing alleged deficiencies in security. And of course, the Games went off without a hitch and everybody seemed to have a good time. Would you consider that an example of this kind of terrorism industrial complex that Secretary of State Colin Powell described it as, going off, getting unhinged?
Yeah, I think so. There's just been a massive overexpenditure, huge overexpenditure, given the degree to which terrorism presents a threat in the London Games. I think I understand that a lot of the impetus was coming from the United States for, you know, adding yet more security guards and yet more security guards. And that's very typical. Basically, someone imagines something bad could happen, and then without analyzing it very carefully, just tons of money is thrown at it. The same thing happened, you know, in the Athens Games, which is what, in 2004, and the only terrorist who showed up was one, a defrocked priest from Ireland who slowed down somebody in the marathon for 2 seconds. That was the closest thing they had to terrorism. So we've had this kind of alarmism going on repeatedly, and much of it has been based on evidence, and intelligence that simply wasn't there.
In your article in the latest issue of International Security, which you've co-written with Mark Stewart, The Terrorism Delusion, America's Overwrought Response to September 11, you go into, 50 cases of supposed Islamic terrorist plots against the United States, and basically show how virtually all of the perpetrators were, in their words, incompetent, ineffective, unintelligent, idiotic, ignorant, unorganized, misguided, muddled, amateurish, dopey, unrealistic, moronic, irrational, and foolish.
Yeah, those are words that came out of the case studies. It came out of an undergraduate seminar, not a seminar. And I asked the students, when they're doing the case study, just tell me what these guys were like. You know, use your own words. Be a good journalist, a good historian. Don't inflate. Don't play around. Just say what they're like. And those words came out repeatedly. Now, if you compare that to what the DHS says about the terrorists, it's completely the opposite. They talk only about terrorists being flexible, diabolical, clever, learning from mistakes, anxious to create major havoc. And they never say, however, most of them are morons, but they just leave out that whole aspect.
So what is it then that feeds this sort of cottage industry on television that that in Salon that Glenn Greenwald was critical of? He referred to it as the sham terrorism expert industry, a highly ideological, jingoistic clique masquerading as objective scholars, all to justify U.S. militarism.
Yeah, I partly agree with that. I call it overblown, the terrorism industry. And it consists of politicians, bureaucrats, people selling things to the government, terrorism experts, and they all have an incentive to inflate the threat. And to be fair to them, they are also responding to public opinion, that basically they feel if they say that, they'll gain points with the public, and if they say anything else, they'll lose points. And they may well be right. So in some respects, the impetus is bottom-up, not top-down.
So you're saying then, John Mueller, that the public sort of conditioned to expect terrorist attacks, that certainly the coverage before the London Olympics would have led one to believe that it was all but inevitable?
Yes, it's. And I've been looking at public opinion. I've been really quite surprised, actually, But I expected, when I hadn't sort of ignored it because some of the polls were sort of off the wall and I couldn't figure out what was going on, but I really sat down and looked at them systematically just in the last few weeks. And what's impressive is that there's been almost no change since 9/11, or at least since the, say, December 2001. If you ask people, do you worry that you might personally be killed by a terrorist? This is pretty much the same level now as it was then. If you ask them, do you expect there to be another major attack that kills hundreds of Americans? The percentage of people saying that's likely or somewhat likely stands at about 70%, pretty much the same as it was in at the time of 9/11, in fact, at the time of September 2001. If you ask people, do you feel safer from terrorism? If anything, they feel less safe than they did 8 years ago. So it's really pretty impressive. What happens is it's just become sort of internalized, I guess, and that's just the way people react to it. And, of course, they've not had very many cues coming out of the administration suggesting things might be somewhat not quite that severe, but they still hang on to it. When you get a huge percentage of people saying I'm very worried or somewhat worried about being killed by a terrorist, this is a situation 11 years after 9/11 when there's been virtually nothing in the way of terrorism in the United States, and in which the official rhetoric has declined somewhat, particularly under the Obama administration. It's still too hysterical for my taste, but it's certainly not as bad as it was under the Bush administration. And the press hasn't been covering it very much either. They're not screaming very much. So even though they're not getting those cues either from the government or from the press, nonetheless, the concern levels, judging from these polls, has remained as high as it ever has been.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. John Mueller, who is the Woody Hayes Chair of National Security Studies at the Mershon Center for International Security Studies at Ohio State University. And he has an article at International Security, The Terrorism Delusion, America's Overwrought Response to September 11. This has been referenced by an article in Foreign Policy and by Glenn Greenwald at Salon.com. Now, just in terms of the money that we've spent on anti-terrorism since 9/11, and on Homeland Security, my understanding is that it's at least $1 trillion, and the risk of dying at the hands of a domestic terrorist is about 1 in 3.5 million. So that you could almost do the math and figure out how much money we could all have in our pockets if we had a choice between being killed by a terrorist or taking the money that we're spending on this kind of illusory threat.
Yes, the book I did with Mark Stewart, Terror, Security, and Money, we try to apply standard risk analysis to the expenditures, and they generally do not, as you suggest, come out looking very well. And it's also been the case, the question is always, the wrong question is always being asked. The question that's being asked is, are we safer? Well, I suppose we're safer if we hire just one security guard someplace or whatever. However, the question is not are we safer, but how safe are we? And following from that, do we really want to spend money to become even safer? And it basically, as you suggested, is that your chance of being killed by a terrorist is something like 1 in 3.5 million. And nobody in officialdom ever says that, with one exception. Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, said it in 2007. He said, get a life, your chance of being killed by terrorists is about the same as being killed by lightning. He was roughly correct on that. But that's the only time any official has basically said, answered the question, how safe are we? That doesn't end the discussion. That's where you begin it. You figure out how safe we are now, and then do we want to make ourselves even safer? And if we are already safe from terrorism, maybe we could spend that money on things that really do kill lots of people, such as automobiles or cancer.
Well, you could add to the list, though, of sensible voices, and that is former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who said that he was concerned that we were creating a kind of terrorism industrial complex.
Yeah, I think that has happened. You have people who are, they'll lose their jobs or they'll lose their contracts if they say other things. And, of course, if you're selling something to the government says, I need a lot of X-ray machines, you're in Washington very quickly explaining how great your x-ray machines are, and you probably will neglect to say that you probably don't really need these things. You're likely to hide the threat like anybody else. The press, I think, the media have been at fault too. I mean, I haven't found anybody practically in the media, including op-eds, say things like your chance of being killed is 1 in 3.5 million. Occasionally it burbles up here and there, but not very often. And they tend to stress the, you know, the dramatic part of it, and then they didn't do follow-up. I mean, I'm glad Glenn Greenwald and also Steve Walt, who wrote the thing in foreignpolicy.com, actually went back and said, did you remember a few weeks ago all this hysteria about terrorists at the London Olympics? You know, whatever happened to them? That question should have been asked frequently during the Bush administration when they said there's a big chance, 90% chance, that there'll be an attack by the next election. And no one ever goes back and says, "What, you know, were you blowing smoke? Did you have some reason to believe that? What was the evidence that caused you to make that preposterous prediction?" And it basically doesn't come up.
Well, but I think it's worse than what you stated in terms of vested interests in the terrorism industrial complex and in maintaining this level of paranoia. Former head of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, under the Bush administration, he's gone into business selling x-ray machines, hasn't he?
Yes, he certainly has. I imagine his salary is quite a bit higher than it was in Iran DHS. But it's up to DHS if they're going to buy it. I mean, people are always trying to sell stuff to the government, and they're going to say their products are really great. And the fault really lies more with the buyers than with the sellers. The sellers are going to try to sell, and it's up to whether it's in the military or in healthcare or anything else, and it's up to the buyers to do it in a rational manner and spend the money in a coherent manner that maximizes public safety, which is what DHS and the other agencies are dealing with in this condition. And they've just done a very bad job of it. We tried to, we were supported. Our original idea when we wrote the book, Terror, Security, and Money, was to evaluate the risk analysis that had been done by DHS. And so we started looking through their stuff, and we couldn't find any. We couldn't find any that even, they did stuff that was called risk analysis, but it never considered risk. Otherwise, it was right on the button, I suppose you could say. And then we were helped a lot because what happened was that Congress, in one of its golden moments, decided to hire the National Academy of Sciences to evaluate the risk analysis that was being done by the Department of Homeland Security. So they had this professional committee look into it, and they worked for the better part of 2 years, concluding at the end of this that essentially DHS doesn't know what the hell it's doing. They were not quite that undiplomatic, but close. What they said was pretty close to exactly what they said. We were unable to find any decision made by DHS that was backed up by an analysis that would pass muster. In other words, they're managing by inbox. They're going in saying, well, what problems could possibly evolve? What could possibly happen? Someone would come up with some sort of movie, Hollywood movie land, scenario, and they'd say, well, we got to throw money at that. So they do, without evaluating whether it would really reduce the risk and whether it would to justify its expenditure. In other words, they were not willing to do the most basic, standard, old-fashioned, codified kinds of approach that has been reused and has basically been required by most government agencies. So it's really something of a scandal. And we're also dealing here with public safety. I mean, we're not dealing with bridges to nowhere. We're not dealing with, you know, should we raise or lower price supports for corn. What we're dealing with is the fundamental reasons, the foundational reason for government, public safety, to preserve the domestic tranquility, practically the first words in the Constitution. And so to do that this way is really remarkably irresponsible in dealing with the most important thing that governments are supposed to be doing, public safety.
Well, this has also led to the militarization of our police because Homeland Security throws this money away and they give them to all these police departments all around the world, around the country, who they sell this threat that you need more high-tech equipment, and you have this absurd thing where you have kind of, you know, military-style tanks and assault vehicles in some small town in the middle of nowhere, you know, as though that would be a target for terrorism.
Yeah, it's without any sort of analysis. There's been a huge tendency to go for technology, when in some cases training would reduce the risk much better at a far lower rate. there's some things that really do work. Sometimes the expensive things are worth it. You know, maybe they do really a terrific job of reducing risk on, from some hazard, and I'm not opposed to spending a lot of money on some of these issues, but only after that kind of analysis is done. We've gone through, for example, in the book, Terror Security and Money, we've gone through like Homeland Security expenditures for airlines, and some things seem to have been really pretty good idea, like the hardened cockpit doors. On the other hand, spending money on federal air marshals is bizarre because it reduces risk almost not at all, and it costs an incredible amount of money. In fact, it turns out that the federal air marshals, the budget for them, including the costs that have to be paid by the airlines in free seats, first class seats at that, is $1.2 billion a year. That is the budget of the entire Los Angeles police force. Give you some idea of the kind of money is being thrown at the situation. In the case of the federal air marshals, there's a few thousand of them. It's actually kind of baffling to me how they're going to manage to expend that much money on maneuvering a few people in and out of airplanes and having them sit in hotel rooms and taking a plane back and training them. But they somehow managed to do it. But it, essentially, by reducing the federal air marshals and using the saved money on cheaper forms of risk reduction, both the airlines and the taxpayers could, this is a no-brainer in our analysis, that both taxpayers and the airlines could save hundreds of millions of dollars a year with you know, just manipulating things a little bit. And that basically has not been considered, as far as I can see, remotely.
Well, Dr. John Mueller, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Good luck.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Dr. John Mueller. He's a political scientist in the field of international relations, as well as a scholar of the history of dance. He is currently the Woody Hayes Chair of National Security Studies at the Mershon Center for International Security and a professor of both political science and dance at Ohio State University. His books include Atomic Obsession, Nuclear Alarmism from Hiroshima to Al-Qaeda, and Overblown, How Politicians and the Terrorism Industry Inflate National Security Threats and Why We Believe Them, and Terror Security and Money, Balancing the Risks, Benefits, and Costs of Homeland Security.